What's up, people? Welcome to a very special edition of the Lariat, not the Eastern Lariat. I know that you all wanted to hear a new episode with Striga, and you're surprised to hear my voice. As always, I'm your host on the show, Dylan Fox. But Striga right now, he's doing some fun stuff in his hometown promotion. Well, not hometown, but home country promotion of WXW. They've got their 16-carat tournament. Lots of great talent going in there, even from Japan. I cannot wait to see how those shows go. I don't know what's going on with them, or anything like that, but I will watch them if possible going on there. But I'm sure he's having fun, but he can't be here this week. So with everything going on since our last episode, we had a special edition of the show then where we had all kinds of nine promotions we covered and talked about. It was a lot of fun, so please go back to watch that, or listen to that, rather. But this week, I've decided to bring on a first-time-ever guest to the Eastern Lariat / Lariat. I'm missing the Eastern, but we're just going to call it the Eastern Lariat anyway, in tribute to our friend Striga. He'll be back next time. But I'm so excited to have this guy on the show. I had never talked to him before tonight, but we've been friends for a long time in the DMs, on Twitter, and just fans of wrestling. And this is somebody I know has so much history in Japanese wrestling that I couldn't wait to jump on board or have him jump on board with me. Hopefully you guys enjoy the show. But I would like to welcome on the author of the hit book on the All Japan Pro Wrestling 2000 split, primarily focused on Mrs. Baba and Mitsuharu Misawa, Ganbaru. This man is a doctor. Dr. Jonathan Foy, welcome to the Lariat.
Man, thank you so much for having me on. And what an introduction that was. I think I'm just going to sit back and let you put me over for the rest of this episode, because that was epic. And I don't know that I can top that as far as introductions go. But no, very, very excited to be on here and to kind of, we're talking before recording, and I was kind of sort of saying this feels like I've skipped developmental, gone straight to the main brand here as far as being on the Eastern Lariat, the Lariat, whatever we want to call it.
It's just the Eastern. No, we're going to use all three of the names.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter which. EL, you could say, going on there. But I want to shout out you. First of all, you had an appearance talking about your book. If anybody out there, I'm sure you heard of it if you're a fan of Japanese wrestling, if you're online in any sense. But if you haven't picked it up yet, if you haven't read it yet, please check out Jonathan's appearance on Kickout 299 with my friend Alicia there. You did a great show talking about the book, really in-depth, all kinds of cool stuff about your background, your history. You don't have to repeat everything or anything like that, but if anybody maybe isn't familiar with you, shout out just your fandom in general and your taste in wrestling, what you love about Japanese wrestling, man.
About what I love about Japanese wrestling? I think we went into it in the show with Alicia, but just as far as that goes, there's so much stuff. Just as far as I've been to Japan a couple of times. I didn't go into that in the show with Alicia, but to see it live, I've been to some shows in Tokyo and out in Kobe and Osaka, and just mostly seeing New Japan live. A couple of old Japan shows and stuff like that. And just, it's an incredible live experience that I would go and I'd have a chance to experience a couple times a year. And, certainly, man, we used to say things like when this pandemic is over, when this is settled, I think I've given up on that being the case, but when travel resumes to Japan more generally, I really look forward to getting back up that way and having a chance to see it live, because the live experience is such an insane way of seeing Japanese pro wrestling. And just, I've been at a couple of these shows and really watching it, you know, as it is right now and watching it on TV, it just doesn't compare, I think. But definitely I've been enjoying lately Great's run. I've been enjoying what All Japan are doing. We'll get into it a little bit later as far as what Noah are doing right now, but I'm definitely enjoying that. Definitely enjoyed New Japan's last couple of shows. So, yeah, man, it's a dream though, to get back there, to take my son, to Japan and to have him experience this stuff live. But in the meantime, there's plenty of stuff to enjoy and plenty of stuff out there that's great and worth checking out. So, but yeah, just total dream stuff for the time being. I guess we can just think on that and think on, what it'll be like when we can finally go back.
it sounds like an amazing deal on your part. It really helped you grow as a fan and widen your experiences and point of view of things. So I'm really happy to have that live perspective of Japanese wrestling. I always appreciate hearing that as well from all kinds of people we've had on over the years, and you are continuing that lineage. And I'm very happy to have you on the show. I will say, just to do a little bit of housekeeping before we get into the main show, I want to shout out to everybody because, first of all, me and you especially, we have to plug this. Next week, we are going to do a show completely about wrestling video games, is how this whole show actually started. This wasn't originally going to be I wasn't going to do anything, and I'll get to that in a second. But the way the stars aligned and fate would have it, that we just had to do a regular show for you guys on there, and it just worked out perfectly and magically. But next week on the Patreon, we're going to do a show about some of our favorite wrestling games and our least favorite wrestling game, which is my favorite part. I right away, the first two of the good picks and the one bad pick. The third one I kind of finagled around on, but I cannot wait to do that show. So I really want to plug that. Go to the Patreon, patreon.com/EasternLariat. You got to go to the Big Hosh tier. We are going to talk about wrestling video games. It's going to be a bona fide hoot.
And I mean, it's going to be interesting because you've just said the part that you're looking forward to the most is that chance to kind of pick out a bad one and talk about that. I think that's the one part that I look forward to the least as far as picking out my bad one goes. So that's going to be interesting. And I think we've definitely got a lot of meat on the bone there as far as stuff to talk about, as far as good and bad Japanese pro wrestling games.
And the thing is, Jonathan, you got to understand, I made the mistake of spending my money on this game. And I spent my time on this game.
Yeah.
And they put me through so much that I had to talk about it. And I've been holding this in for so long that I feel like it's like release therapy or something. Shout out to Luke.
So there you have it. The people who spend money to get to the Patreon tier can hear a therapy session as well as us just having a chance to talk about like our favorite games as well.
You might be on the couch by the end of this, if this is my therapy session. So let's not go
there.
Not
that kind of doctor, so you know.
Well, that's true. But you're a multi-talented person, okay? You can't tell people the truth when you're trying to put yourself over. You have to make everything up at the end of the day.
That's from a wrestler there as well, so people better take note of that.
Absolutely. I'm sure and most wrestlers don't agree with that at all. They always tell you the truth. They'll never lie to you there. But no, for real, though, it's going to be a lot of fun. That's definitely not a lie. And I can't wait to get into it because I have a lot of things to say about so many different things. But also want to shout out March Madness. I've been a little slow on that on Twitter, but it's going to start probably by the time this episode releases or shortly thereafter. I've had a little personal issue with my grandpa Ken. I know everybody knows him if you've been listening to the show at any time. He had a really bad fall, hurt his head. He had to go to the hospital. He's been away for a little while. If you follow me on Twitter, you'll notice I haven't said anything in a little while. It's because I've been super busy with that. And that's why it took me away from the Patreon for a few days. I was really bummed out about that. But for real, though, in all seriousness, Jonathan, when we were DMing about stuff, we ended up somehow going on to the New Japan Anniversary show to talk about. And that inspired me to start watching again. I was watching some old school wrestling, and you know I can't be kept away from for long from wrestling. And Ken, he's getting a little bit better day by day. He should be home anytime soon. But just shout out to Ken right now. Anybody wants to send some good wishes, good vibes? I said this on the Patreon show I did the other day, but he always appreciates. Whenever anybody reacts to anything I say about Ken, I always make sure to let him know. And he always appreciates that people talk about him, good or bad at times.
He's been a feature on the show at points, too. He's been in the background at different points. He's come in and said stuff. He's kind of like his own star in a lot of ways.
Yes, he's like a secret character, like Noob Saibot in Mortal Kombat. Pretty much. That's basically him. He's one of my favorite characters in Mortal Kombat. Hey, is Mortal Kombat available for the wrestling podcast? Can I pick one of those?
Oh, look, we can just twist the rules of that however you want to twist it. So you have to include the games that you want to include, you know. So the only real rules that we've established there was like three of our good ones, one of our bad ones. And apart from that, man, if you want to add Mortal Kombat in there and just sort of say, look, Mortal Kombat's inspired enough wrestlers at some point with this and that gimmick. And, you know, I think about when kind of like I first saw Loki, 2002, I was like, that's a Mortal Kombat character. So for sure, if you want to say Mortal Kombat's a wrestling game, by all means, we could say that Final Fight was a Mortal Kombat, was a wrestling game. We could incorporate a bunch of different stuff. So yeah, look, by all means, whatever you want to justify.
Okay, good. In some ways, it's kind of like how in some of the games, you know, they always have the knockoff characters. In some ways, Glacier was like, you know, a world tour version of Sub-Zero. In a lot of ways,
how could I forget Glacier? Just
the classic Mortal Kombat wrestling gimmick on there. But yeah, you know, there's a lot of different styles and stuff, but just everything going on. He's kind of like, but Ken, though, for real, though, he always appreciates people saying nice stuff about him or bad stuff. He'll get riled up. It's very abusive. So hopefully he recovers and he'll be back on in the podcast. The main thing on the podcast, I think, on the main show, definitely on the Patreon shows, he's barged in on me and Rob numerous times and said stuff. And sometimes he'll just come in, I'll automatically ask him something like, hey, Ken, what do you think about Jay White? And he'll be like, I hate him, or something like that.
Which is a good response. Yeah, good response.
yeah, or something like that. Some people that he doesn't like, I will always need him. Or just AEW in general, he will always have a good reaction to. But regardless, hopefully he's doing well. In fact, I know he's doing better, but hopefully everybody out there gives him some love, shows me some love, too. Always love the good vibes from my friends and the Eastern Lariat family in general. So thank you for that. And now, what we are here to talk about, it's not random jibber-jabber about Mortal Kombat, although that will come up next week, I'm sure.
That'll be our next episode for sure.
Yeah, so that's the Patreon exclusive. That's the tease we have there. That's another wrestling trick right there for everyone. You have to tease the fans.
Be foreshadowed right there.
Absolutely. And we are going to foreshadow something else right now, because your book is all about All Japan Pro Wrestling in the year 2000, and you jump around a little bit. You've got a lot of different years that you go by. You really tell the story of All Japan in a lot of ways in your book. And we're going to take that next step forward to something that could not be written in the book because it didn't happen yet when you wrote it. But 2022, the most unilaterally numbered year, perhaps in our history, we are seeing a champion carnival. And All Japan Pro Wrestling this year, first of all, before we get into the Champion Carnival, I just want to kind of give a brief expander. That's not a real word, I'm pretty sure. You can tell I'm not an author myself.
Sounds like a word. I believe it. I know what you're talking about. So expander, go ahead.
I'm expandering all over this place right now. And we need to talk about the last episode. Me and Striga talked about our thoughts on All Japan. Did you listen to the last episode?
So the last one that you guys recorded was kind of going into – let me just literally pull up the podcast gimmick here. And let me have a look at the Eastern Lariat shows that I've listened to. So talk among yourselves. Every time I pull up the Eastern Lariat, another show called The Eastern Border comes up, which sounds interesting. I have no idea. But that was the Pop Fury the Digest episode 205. Yeah. And what you talked about nine promotions. So definitely I heard that one. And, outside of maybe, the Big Japan fans, I don't think there was anyone that could have been disappointed with that episode. I think that you covered off a whole lot there as far as nine episodes go. So yeah, look, I think, generally speaking, All Japan is a promotion that we could say, outside of a couple of missteps here and there, and we could definitely get into what those have been, and definitely have lost a few people recently. Definitely a company that's doing some interesting things and I think is steadily building. Interesting stuff is definitely coming up that we can talk about from there. But what did you have in mind with All Japan? What's kind of your take as we kind of head into talking about the Champion Carnival? What kind of is front of mind for you?
Yes, you know, I just was thinking about this pretty recently when we were talking earlier. Like I said, I started to look at things with All Japan, and the last show that they did, I did a review on Patreon, but the long story short of it was I really liked the show. The main event didn't really appeal to me too much, but I wanted to say real quick about that that show did a really strong number in Corcoran Hall by even pretty much normal standards, like almost 800 fans, and definitely one of the biggest they've done in the last years. I really think that Kento has kind of become underrated in a lot of ways because I think he's been in the tag scene so long, and before all this, he was the champion for so long, I think some people got a little tired of him, and myself included, just as a fan. I didn't love everything he was doing. But then you see him come in after a lot of their struggles last year with their Suwama as champion and then Jake Lee, which I think most people would agree it didn't really go as great as it could have. You know, there was ups and downs to it. I'm not going to rip on Jake too much or anything like that. But Kento coming in, his first match with this kind of weird challenger in Abdullah Kobayashi does a huge number. I think people have kind of forgotten that this guy is a true star in Japanese wrestling, and I think it deserves a lot of credit. But yeah, go on.
It reminds me of what you said a couple of weeks ago. It was in recording one of the 90s Project episodes where you described Dean Malenko as kind of being this guy that, because people overrated him, there was a corrective to that where people were trying to say, oh, he's not that great. And then they ended up, instead of going from a 10 out of 10 to, say, a 7 or whatever, they gave him 0. I feel like Kento is similar to that. You know, people want to say, oh, he was down our throats for so long, or he was pushed to such an extent, that they forget just how good this guy is and just how amazing his matches can be. He's someone who manages to have great matches without doing a whole lot. He doesn't do a whole lot in the ring, but he's someone who I think is, I think maybe we've forgotten just how good he is and how much of a draw. And I think that show kind of went to show you there as far as, him versus Abdullah Kobayashi. I think that was, look, as far as matches go, it wasn't fantastic, but I think that they worked very hard and they did clearly something right to draw that crowd that they did.
And it's worth mentioning too that Hikaru Sato, huge draw as well, winning the junior title. I think that was really the most important thing, but I wanted to give Kento some love as well.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think in general, I've kind of been trumpeting All Japan lately, the last few months. I think that they're kind of underrated in general as a promotion. Again, I don't want to repeat myself from last episode, but I think they're really on the right path. And as we head into the Champion Carnival, I'm pretty excited about where we're going. Something that was a little bit interesting to me is that as we go along, they haven't announced any of the lineup for the Carnival yet. That's interesting to me because it feels like they would do it a little bit earlier in February rather than March. Obviously, the next show, they're building a big show at the end of the month with Ishikawa challenging for the title, which I'm sure will be a fun match. Ishikawa is another one of these guys I was really down on for a while, but suddenly he's gotten some of that Fountain of Youth magic going the last few months. I really like what he's doing in there. But when it comes to Champion Carnival, with the promotion where it's at right now, Kento's the champion. I think at their core, they're trying to stabilize everything a little bit with this title and get things to where they need to go in the grand scheme of things. I think ultimately this title reign will be about who comes after him, and I'm not saying even whoever that may be. I think that he is a big-time setup for somebody else, more so than him, but he'll obviously have a great reign. With the company where it's at right now, what's your feeling on the Champion Carnival? And we'll break this down in two different areas, I think. You know, first of all, we can talk about who we think is going to be in it, and two, what is the ultimate goal of this tournament? So where do you want to go with the participants? Is there anybody you have your eye on in terms of – obviously, you have the obvious guys like, the main guys that are going to be in there. Do you have any kind of people on your wish list or people you think are possible –
I could do an entire episode as to who my wish list could be, right? I think there's only for sure, 20,
you know, there's only a few limited spots to this tournament. Yeah. So we have to keep that in mind. We can't have 50 people in the group.
I think for sure to just explain my mindset a little bit. 2 years ago we had a fantastic lineup that was announced for the Champion Carnival, and then we didn't get to have it because as COVID took hold, All Japan initially said, we're going to go ahead with this thing anyway. We're going to, you know, be careful, but we're still going to have the tournament. And then they went, oh, crap, actually, we can't do this, and canceled it. But we had Davey Boy Smith Jr. We had Suwama. We had Sugira from Noah. We had a couple of all the talents from all around the place. Just about every promotion that you can think of was booked for this thing. There was Ayato Yoshida. There was so many other people that it looked like a dream lineup, right? And then COVID hit. The eventual Champion Carnival that we got that year, it wasn't great. It wasn't bad. There were some standout matches. Zeus won, which was great. But as far as my mentality goes and who I'd love to see, I think back to that, and I think back to some of those names that were announced that we didn't get to see for one reason or another. And I don't know if they're holding back on releasing the information yet because they're still working through some arrangements. Maybe they need to negotiate a few people, or if it's simply kind of like New Japan did last year with the G1, where they just wanted to hold off and not take too much heat for it not being a stellar lineup. I don't know where they're going with that. But look, I do hope we get to see someone like a Segura in this, who I don't know if that's likely or not. They haven't really worked with Pro Wrestling Noah for quite some time, and I don't want to stake my hopes on this against him being on the Champions Carnival by any stretch, but I think that would be a fantastic kind of story to tell. You know, he didn't get to be in it. It's been 2 years gone by, and now he's there. That would be my dream pick if I could choose anyone. I don't know how likely that is. Apart from that, I think just someone who was on their last show that was at 2AW Square, as far as Yoshida goes, that's someone who I think they should be trying to make a hard play for and try to book as much as they can. So those are two picks. I'd probably also pick someone who was in last year's Champion Carnival, which was someone who I think is underrated in general, that being Kohai Sato. I'm sure I'm mispronouncing several people's names here, but just, you know, not the best wrestler in the world, not this amazing superstar, kind of intimidating presence though, has that scar down his forehead, just kind of looks like a badass and how a wrestler should. And he hasn't been in All Japan for a little while, but I'll be happy if they can book him for this one again. Am I way off in my kind of my hopes and dreams here? Am I just looking to have these dashed? What do you think here as far as this goes? Am I kind of tilting at windmills in terms of who I want for this year's Champion Carnival?
Absolutely. Just like, honestly, I like your picks. Listen, first of all, there are no tournaments or shows or anything in life that wouldn't be made better if Takashi Sugira was involved in it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I completely approve of this.
I knew I was kind of going for a safe bet that you would approve of. given that I think in the last show you said that Noah should just give him all the belts as their safe pick.
Yes, I did. You DM'd me about that. Yes, that was my big idea. That was on the Patreon show. We will get to. I will repeat it here. Yes, the answer to any Noah problem is always to give Sugira not just one title. He needs multiple titles, in my opinion. And he's already got the 0-1 title. So even more titles. And why not be the true Triple Crown champion? Noah, 0-1, and All Japan. That is my dream future for Takashi Sugira.
Yep, I'd give him all the titles and all the promotions and have him put Muto to shame.
He's going to be like the Omega of Japan with his belt collector deal. They're going to try to do everything they can. There's rumors going around the last couple of years. Noah was trying to get the Tokyo Sports MVP award. They couldn't do it with just Noah. If they have somebody win 3, 4, 5 titles, Tokyo Sports is not going to have any choice. They're going to have to give this.
It'd be undeniable. So, yeah, I'm all for this.
Politically, I really don't know. The thing is, with Japanese wrestling, it's easy to say, no, that can't happen. But the reality is, things change really fast a lot in Japanese wrestling. We've seen it time and time again coming in there. Even like the Noah and New Japan show working together, nobody really saw that coming. There's stuff that comes out of left field all the time. As you mentioned, there could be some backdoor deals they're trying to work out at the last minute. You never know. I also think perhaps some kind of visa issue could be with that, with them trying to, you know, as they're opening the border to travelers, maybe they're wanting to get everything solidified in time.
That situation is very interesting because a lot of organizations and a lot of sports are trying to get their people in. Ryzen are getting, I think, a dozen foreign athletes in for one of their April tournaments. So there's definitely a lot of people there trying to process this that could be holding things up.
That's just speculation on my part, of course. But it could be any number of reasons, as you said. Segura, I think, would be a wonderful pick. Kohei Sato, you say Kohei, I say Kohei. Like, who knows?
I'll be happy to say Kohei. I definitely am not the best at pronouncing a lot of these guys' names, and I'll definitely be happy to bow to someone else's expertise on that one for sure.
Sato, as he's known. Well, here's the thing about him. This is something I've probably said before, and I'll repeat it again because it's worth repeating. Out of all the wrestlers, I'm not going to sit here and say he's the most intimidating in terms of being like the toughest badass, the strongest or the fastest or anything like that. But if you just want, if the bet is you have to beat someone who's in Japanese wrestling in a dark alley at midnight, he's basically the last one I would pick.
Yeah. Yeah.
His look is very intimidating. He has the tattoo. He has the scar. His forehead's all messed up. Which is funny because if you ever follow his Twitter, he's very wholesome. He's always posting pictures.
It's always cat pictures and him with his hair slicked back in some cafe somewhere with his glasses on. It's just such a great contrast, isn't it?
Absolutely. So I he was good in All Japan last year in the tournament. He got a good run. I thought he was pretty good. He didn't necessarily he wasn't an MVP candidate for me, but he's like a solid mid-tier dude that can put on some bangers when the time calls for it and hit people very hard as well when the time calls for it, which you always need those guys at the end of the day. Yoshida, I really hope that they bring in a beloved member of the Inoki Genome Soldiers, the best promotion in all of wrestling.
As voted by people on Twitter, you don't just stand alone on that one. That was the near consensus.
Absolutely. And I appreciate all the votes and all the love. And I'm sure Yoshida does too as well. He called me actually after that and let me know he was proud to be on my team. But no, in reality though, as a wrestler, I really like what he brings to the table. And he's a guy that you always have good memories of him when he was in All Japan. Even back to his New Japan days, he's been flirting with these bigger companies for a while now. In 2AW, again, politically, nobody really knows. But he's a guy that I really think has a huge upside. Even now, if he were to get into a champion carnival and got to have matches with all these guys, I think he'd stand out and really make the tournament a lot better and add something to it as well. In terms of some of my picks and some of my ideas, first of all, I think it's clear that Kazuma will be in there.
Yeah.
He's been booked pretty strongly of late with this Yoshitatsu feud, which miraculously I enjoyed their match, actually, on the last show, the Yoshitatsu goofy comedy match that they had. I think he's a very good heel foil. And he had a run in the tag league. And the guy I really think that they should bring in is Kengo Mashimo with the 2AW connection, the tag team connection. I don't know if he really fits Cosmo's stable, though, that he's got going on right now, because it's this weird, mishmash kind of group.
He's just not goofy enough, is he? He's way too kind of – it would be too sensible a pick for them to bring in. So they need someone further left field than that, I think.
What if he turned on Cosmo and teamed with Yoshitatsu?
I think this is the wrinkle the storyline needs now. We need to amp the weirdness up to 11, and I think that's the best way.
Yes, thank you for the suggestion. What was your name? In Wrong Guy? Thank you. That was a great idea that you led in there. But he's a guy, in all seriousness, though, Mashima, whatever role he gets put in, this guy can have bangers. I've always said, it's kind of forgotten nowadays, because he hasn't been around in a long time at this point. He battled through injuries. But to me, he was one of Kento's best rivals that he had. They did a lot of time limit draws with each other that year and really built Kengo up to a world title match the following June in 2016. And he had some really great matches with Kengo. That was one of my matches of the year. And I know he can still do it now. Even in a tag run, they could use that to set up. Just have him have some good matches, even. Give Kento someone a little bit different that he hasn't fought in a long time to have a big title match with. I think that would help his title reign. Somewhat similar to what we've seen with Okada with things in New Japan, where you had Desperado as this, rare foil for him, and it really made him more interesting than facing the same guys over. I think that they should definitely put somebody in the tournament that gives a new challenge for Kento, or at least a fresh challenge of some sort, even though Kengo has wrestled him before. I think that's somebody that they definitely need to look at as a guy that would come in. And you look at the Great roster, they've worked together really strongly with All Japan and Great in the past. I think that there are so many different guys on the roster that would be good in the Champion Carnival. I think, obviously, everyone would want one of the Strong Hearts. I think Lindemann would be eliminated from that because of him being the champion right now.
Also, yeah, him being a junior as well.
Yeah.
I guess All Japan seemed to have more of a hierarchy there between juniors and heavyweights, although they did have some open weight madness. So, yeah, it might well be that I'm overrating that just that little bit. But yeah, you're right. Him being the champion does add the political aspect to that as well.
And Shima right now, it seems like they're more worked into New Japan in general, was where I was going with all of this.
Yeah.
I don't know if they would be in an All Japan tournament when they could do New Japan stuff like we're seeing with Shima right now. I think a guy that I'd really like to see would be someone like an Ito that would bring a different vibe to the tournament. He has the size. He would have unique matches with everybody in his block. And you could build him, I think, to have a legitimate title shot that would help both companies. In the end, Ito would lose to Kento. That would continue his story of falling short that they did in Great. And you could have just some banger matches. So that would be kind of my pick, my dream pick, so to speak.
And to your point earlier, you know, you said that the thing that has maybe helped is when these champions can have matches with different people. I think that's why the Abdullah Kobayashi match worked in an odd way as a draw, but he hasn't faced Kento a bunch of times. And I think that match right there, if we get a chance to see Ito against Kento, we've never seen that before. Ito does a lot of those UWF kind of style matches as well, as far as his position in Great goes. So he's bringing something different to All Japan by doing that. And I think we could definitely see a totally different match out of Kento versus an Ito or something like that. That could definitely help freshen up this title run and make it different to all the other ones that we've seen.
Absolutely. And the Carnival's the perfect place to start it. I'm going to throw two more kind of ideas at you here. We can kind of discuss a little bit that I think they're worth talking about. It was a little out of left field. I haven't seen anybody come up with this idea, but it's one I think has some merit to it when you think about it. The first one I'll go to is the idea of a New Japan crossover, somebody wrestling in the Champion Carnival. I'll tell you right now that I don't really see that happening because I feel like New Japan is very – we saw it in the Noah show that they ran, that they're very stringent about who they want to take losses. I think it would be really tough to have them take a fall, like a straight-up singles loss to – you know, an outsider, pretty much somebody from a different company, when it comes to a Champion Carnival level guy. I guess maybe if you want to have like a Yujiro like type of guy, they that might be who you could get. They might call on and say, look, and even then they'd probably say Yujiro has to win a lot and maybe lose at the end. And I don't think people want that in All Japan. No offense to Yujiro. He's been wrestling for a long time. He's done many things in his career, but I just don't think the All Japan fans would really vibe with something like that. And I think with the political incarnations coming up already, I'm sure they're dealing with a lot of headaches for the show that they're going to do in April, which we're going to talk about in a little bit. I think that it's going to be tough for them to have a guy in the carnival with that show in the middle of it.
Oh, most definitely. But did you have anyone out of New Japan that you would like to see in particular that you would think, as far as left field goes? You know, it's both companies' 50th anniversary and stuff like that. So is there anyone, like one guy that you would go him?
I think, for me, the best case scenario, and I this is probably the guy I would trust the most as well, and that is Tanahashi.
He's
already been in the carnival before. Obviously, times were a lot different back then.
He was a freelancer at that point,
Yeah, his very brief run outside of New Japan in 2008, coming in there, which also ended up leading to him coming back from injury way earlier than expected for the G1 that year, coming in there. But They have some stuff with Suwama you could draw on. You know, you have a guy like, obviously, the dream match with Kento that you could have in there. And I think Tanahashi, I saw how he worked that match with Yo, which we're going to talk about a little bit. I thought that was such a great performance from him specifically. And he's a guy that it seems like he always knows just what buttons to push, will always make the other guy look as strong as himself. And I don't think he would hate taking a fall at the end of it. Even if New Japan was overly critical of anything, I think he might be able to massage things and see the greater good and would take the fall for whoever would win the tournament. I think he would have to make the final, but I still think he would do the right thing at the end.
I think politically it would be ideal because he's someone who has the stroke, who could essentially be able to manipulate things enough that for New Japan, this is their guy going into another promotion. It's still eyes on them at the end of the day. They're still going to have that New Japan logo in the background or on the screen in front of him. It's still going to be someone who'd be booked strong enough to get to the final. But ultimately, for All Japan, that's getting more fans into the seats. It would then put New Japan in a position where they could effectively ask All Japan for whatever it is that they want come the G1, which, again, they've so far been resistant, I should say, to using anyone from another company for the G1. They've been that way for a few years. I think the last tournament we saw with someone genuinely appear from another company outside of AEW guys coming over in the brief time that we had Mox there was 2006 with the Noah guys. So 2016, I should say, sorry. Yeah, look, that would be ideal in so many ways. And he's not averse to putting people over at the end of the day.
And also, another point is he's not a main player for New Japan anymore either, to where they would, you know, it would be that killer for them.
In saying all of that, too, you did mention Yujiro, and I think shout out to Xavier or Zavi at a dumb millennial on Twitter. He's one of the biggest fans I've seen of Yujiro, and I'm sure he would love to see him in the Champion Carnival and, you know, take those wins and those shock pinfalls here and there. So look, there's always space for that too, I guess. But
shout out to someone else. I love his draft and his fantasy promotions he's doing right now.
Who else did you have? You had someone else there, I believe.
With New Japan.
Oh, left in your drawer, I think. Some other people you had to mind, yeah.
Oh, yeah. So you agree with me that Tanahashi is like the best?
Oh, ideally, yes. Because yeah. We could get that dream match. We could have him put some people over here and there. He'd win the odd match. Not just the odd match. He'd probably win most matches, but then put some people over here and there and be ideally placed. He's got enough stroke to be able to get away with it, but not such that he's going to be an unbeatable guy for them. It's the ideal match for sure. As far as someone to put in.
Yeah. Like maybe win all his block matches, draw with Kento and make the final and then lose in the final would kind of be how I would foresee that going in my mind. But my left field pick that I haven't seen anybody talk about when it comes to, this happening, but we know that he's probably coming back to wrestling. I think he announced something already, but Naoya Nomura making a surprise return to All Japan.
Excellent, excellent pick. Yep, fantastic. Yeah. And I've had this thought myself as well. Yep.
Excellent. I'm glad great minds think alike.
when my mom was a kid at high school, she had someone cheat off her test, right? And the person just told the teacher, oh, well, look, great minds think alike. And the teacher just sort of shakes her head and goes, fools seldom differ. So I don't know if it's, yeah, I'd like to think it's great minds think alike here as well. Or fools seldom differ might be the case here. But yeah, definitely Nomura would be a great shock option as well. And he's a freelancer now.
Absolutely. So, you know, I think that would be a very interesting call. That could be possible. You know, we don't know what his big plans are at the end of the day. Going in there, but I just think it's going to be some really cool stuff in the future for the carnival. I like everybody going on there, everything going on in the company right now, pretty much. Like you said, even that Abdullah Kobayashi match definitely worked, even though that wasn't one for me specifically as a fan. I think that they made it work. I think Kento did a great job, and the company seems like it's going in the right direction, which I think for a long time – they were having a lot of missteps and things like that that kind of held them back, or maybe just some bad luck on some things. But I'm really interested in the Carnival. Can't wait to see what kind of lineups we get. If they have some outsiders, I'll be happy, really, no matter who it is. I think that would be really cool at the end of the day. You know, I think that it's just a really good time to be a fan of All Japan right now.
I think the other pick that you had from the prior episode, forgive me if I can't remember if that was on the free show or if it was on the Patreon, but from Big Japan, one of the guys that was in the tag match the other day, I think he's relatively new to wrestling, and was that Kaito or was that someone else that I'm thinking of here?
That's exactly who I was thinking of, Kato.
Kato,
I love this guy. Like I always have. Pretty much as soon as I saw him, he had just a tremendous tag match a few years ago with Hideki versus Hyodo and Sekimoto. Or they might have switched the veteran partners. But I just thought it was an incredible match that they had. And it's something that I just love seeing. And he stood out among everybody in the match. And he had a great match with Okabayashi a couple of years ago. And he's just a guy I think has everything it takes to have some upside. He would be one of the standout players, I think, even now, if they gave him a block of matches, that would just be incredible. So, yeah, I'm totally on board with that. Excellent call on your part.
So I guess we've got everyone here in this thing from Sugira to Tanahashi. I think it's a solid lineup that we've kind of got here. If we can only even see a few of these guys, it would be a fantastic carnival.
Even just one of them would make me really happy at the end of the day. But, like I said, great ideas all about. I pretty much agree with all of them. And I think it's good. One more thing on the carnival, I will say, what do you think the format's going to be?
The question, isn't it? Yeah. I mean, you mentioned before, you know, when you discussed the possibility of Tanahashi winning his block, whether they're going to use the block format, I'm tempted to think by the dates that they've selected and by the layout of this thing, it's very tempting for me to think that maybe they're going to do what they did last year, which is simply have everyone in a single round robin block. That's fine. That they booked that very well. It could be tempting to think that since they did this for the it's the Real World Tag League. I discussed this in the book briefly that there's whether you call it the Real World Tag League or the Strongest Determination Tag League. I know Real World Tag League is probably rolled off the tongue now a little bit better. They used that block format where you had four individual blocks and then an elimination round. That was intriguing. So, look, I'll be happy with whatever they pick out of those options. But what do you think? Is it going to be multiple blocks? Or is it going to be just the same format that they had last year?
Long-time listeners will know I'm always in favor of four blocks of lesser people. The World Cup-style format, I think, is always a lot of fun, very useful, and sets up semifinals, which I always love, and saves a lot of matches. You can do multiple blocks without burning through a ton of matches.
And Noah had that last year for the N1.
Yes.
It's been done.
Yeah, absolutely. And it worked great when they did it. I thought they did a fantastic job setting up Nakajima's win. Which I will talk about in a little bit adventures that he's on right now. But I think ultimately, like you said, the format of the tournament and the dates they've selected, just not as many as you might want for them. I do agree with you that perhaps a one block format would be the best way to go about it, or the most likely way anyway. Which even then you could still build a final match, the two top guys at the block win, or just do one of those unofficial, final matches where the two guys who are leading the block just so happen to face each other on the last match on the show.
Yeah, again, the coincidences in wrestling.
It's all just a coincidence. It's amazing how that always happens. It's just an amazing stroke of luck when you think about it. But so we've gone through the participants, we think. We kind of laid that out. I think we had some interesting talking points there. We talked about the format. Ultimately, right now, and like I said, we don't know who's in this tournament as we're recording this. The person we say might not even be in the tournament by the time it happens. But who do you think this tournament is going to be built around and going to win ultimately?
I do think – so there's a couple of different ways they could go about this. But I think the fact that they kind of felt the need to keep certain people out, I think we should say, of that title tournament. I think that speaks volumes. You know, I think that when it comes down to it,
not to cut you off, but I completely agree with you. Hikaru Sato, he was robbed of big.
Yes, exactly. The fact that who is the comedy performer that they had? They booked him a few times in All Japan. Osaka Pro guy back in the day. He had a couple of matches recently. If that's not sufficiently vague.
Yes, that is pretty vague, but Osaka Pro guy who had some matches. Are you talking about Kikutaro?
Exactly, Kikutaro. Yep. Actually, now I would actually unironically enjoy him in the Champion Carnival, so that, you know, as the comedy guy, I guess. But yeah, no, clearly.
I totally agree with you, by the way. I know that may surprise some people. I think if I were fantasy booking a tournament, no lie, I would specifically try to get as many different styles of people as possible. Like, try to have a flash pin guy, a shoot stylist, a big heavyweight, a comedy guy. I think all of those players should have room. So I completely agree with you. If Kikutaro was in there, I'm all for
it. Like, I started off joking about that, and then I realized, no, that would unironically work, because you don't have, in tournaments, you shouldn't have, like, the same guys on there anyway, or else it gets very, very dry. But certainly, as far as that goes, we've seen New Japan use, in so far as I know, he's not one of your favorite guys, but definitely they've used like comedy wrestlers before. And the guy that I do think you originally asked me who would win, I do think Yuma Aoyagi. I'm always pronouncing his name terribly, but I do think that the fact that he wasn't included in the Triple Crown tournament, to me, spoke volumes. I think that he'll eventually be factored into winning the Triple Crown, and I think he'll have his moment. My question is, does he win the Champions Carnival and then go on to win that match later and get the Triple Crown, perhaps at the Budokan show? We know they're building up to that. Or do they kind of go for someone more immediate to lose to Kento and then set up for that match later, kind of thing, like keep it in reserve? What do you think? That's who I think is going to win. But am I kind of off on that? Because, again, they could choose someone else and do that match earlier.
I think Yuma winning the Carnival and then winning the title at Budokan is the most simple and straightforward way to do it. And we've seen that a lot of times Japanese wrestling bookers don't always go with the most straightforward way to do things.
Exactly,
so,
yeah. When All Japan works well, though, they generally use a fairly simple kind of formula that makes sense. We had Jake Lee win the Champion Carnival last year and then win the title. Obviously, the way that they got there, though, goes to your point, and they used the less obvious way once Suwama was out with COVID last year. They used the most convoluted possible way to get the Jake Lee title win.
One of the worst matches of the year, like, hands down.
Unfortunately, because that one had the right result at the end of the day.
Yeah, and I think that actually, no lie, I do think all of that really took a big chunk out of Jake's title reign. It could have been a lot better, and I think getting off to that really bad start hurt him in a lot of ways. And then, like, facing Ashino again the month after, I think wasn't something anybody wanted. Again, some bad luck was involved with all of that, though, because, you know, him just beating Suwama straight up would have been very good, I feel like. But unfortunately, life kind of took them in a different way. So you can't really fault them too bad, but the way they did it was very bad, I have to say. But, you know, that's the thing we have to look out for. Because Yuma, I think, is the obvious favorite. Mm. And the obvious choice, the guy who has not won the title yet out of all the next stream guys, besides Nomura, obviously, who's not there right now. But I think he's the obvious choice. So if you were to throw a curveball guy, just somebody to kind of keep Kento busy over the summer, pretty much, perhaps, and you could have him challenge for the title there, if they were to do that, I think Yuma's going to win in my heart. Maybe I'll end up looking stupid in a month and a half from now, and it'll be like, of course not. They went with this other guy. But if they were to throw a curveball, who would kind of be the leading candidate for you?
As far as a curveball goes, I see the other thing too that I hadn't mentioned before as well is I would not be surprised when we're talking outsiders. Zeus is technically an outsider now. He is now heading up as far as Osaka Pro Wrestling goes. But if you want to show the power of Osaka Pro Wrestling, if you want to show the power of that kind of partnership, if you wanted someone who can come in and look strong, but not so strong that when he doesn't win the Triple Crown Championship match in the filler kind of match, it's not a filler match, you know what I mean, then, yeah, that would be someone who would be excellent for that role. He would make Osaka Pro look strong and yet be vulnerable enough to lose a fall to Kento at the end of the process without losing anything. So that would be who I'd choose if that was what they had in mind. Obviously, we're not the bookers of All Japan. And if we were, all the interesting things that we would come up with if you look at our Champion Carnival kind of lineup there. So, you know, I don't know if we have to audition or if they just simply listen to the show or what the process is, but hell, give us the book at some point. That's who I'd choose. Who would you have in mind if it's not going to be Yuma? If they're not going to give it to someone with the idea in mind like they had last year to give them the belt, who would you choose for that kind of filler role, I guess?
I think all of the people within the company, the options there, none of them are really that great, in my opinion, if they were to do that. Just because, you know, so Ishikawa, he's just getting a title shot. Suwama, we don't really want him to win the Champion Carnival. Like, again, Ashino, do we need him to lose another title shot? So it's like you're going down the list, and I don't think any of them lead to positive things at the end of the day. So it's really tough for me to even pick a good player in All Japan right now, because I think they're all a little bit – they wouldn't benefit as much from something like that, just based with the roster they have now. You know, somebody that could be interesting, now that I think about it, would be Jake winning and going for it again. I think that would be an interesting story that they could at least tell and do something with over the summer.
Because then he'd go back-to-back twice in a row. He'd win the Champion Carnival. He'd have that whole thing in the bag of, I never lost his belt. You could play an entire angle off of all of that. And when he did put over Kento, that would add to the idea that I was discussing with Alicia beforehand, which is that kind of builds Kento as being Jake's white whale that he eventually will need to step in and one day beat for that title. It kind of puts that whole thing, gives it more heat, puts Yuma in the back pocket for the time being until he can win at the Budokan. Yeah, I think if you're going to do that, he'd be the ideal pick.
Yeah, see, so we were pretty much in agreement on that. I think that is pretty much the best case scenario. And overall, I am hyped for the Champion Carnival. Cannot wait to talk about their big show at the end of the month some more, and also whatever they have in mind for the Carnival. I think it's going to be really interesting. Hopefully they have something in mind. Maybe they are following what you said at the start, though. Just trying to draw this out as much as possible so they don't disappoint anybody. It's the same people as last
year. Yeah, that could well be. But last year's Carnival was so solid and so great. And the episode that you and Striga did going into the results, what it all meant, breaking that down, that was an excellent episode. So, look, I'd be happy enough if they just have the same people as last year. It was a fantastic lineup. I don't think it will be, but, look, we'll see in a couple of weeks' time.
Yeah, well, we'll get there eventually, and obviously we will be talking about it here one way or the other on the Eastern Lariat, your home for all Japanese wrestling news and notes and reviews and previews as well. So, one more thing we got to talk about with All Japan, and it's kind of a good bridge topic to New Japan, is the 50th anniversary duel show that they're having together in April. And we had some matches get announced just today, like right before we started recording. What timing? They knew that we were going to start talking, and they had to give us something. They threw a little bit out there for us to take it, and we're taking the bait right now. New Japan's got us hooked again. And they threw out some matches here. And they had a interpromotional match, which is very interesting. You have Runaway Suplex, Suwama, and Shotaro Ashino, and Evolution combined, like Suwama, the member of both sides, but Ashino's not an Evolution, even though he always teams with them. But whatever. They are, Ashino and Suwama will team with Don Tamura to take on Hiroki Goto, Yoshihashi, and Yo, the Chaos team, and the Battle of the Tag Team Champions as well here, and Goto and Yoshihashi being put in another dual tag title match, as we saw here. And with that said, what do you make of this here? It's not a match with all star-studded main eventers deals, but they are showing that they're willing to kind of spruce this up with promotional matches.
I mean, say this pertains to what we can expect. If the final product is going to be something sort of similar to this, it's nothing huge, it's nothing I'd call groundbreaking, but it's perfectly solid. It makes sense. You've got champions against champions. I dig it. I'd love to see them continue with that and have champions versus champions through the night. If they could have a tag team match in the main event with the Triple Crown champion against the IWGP World Champion, then that sounds like a great option. Obviously, this is going to be in the midst of the Champion Carnival, so you don't want to burn too many big matches in this show. It's a show set up to pay tribute to the anniversary of both companies, as well as the anniversary of Kurik and Hall. So look, if this ends up just being tag matches like this, but pitting champions against champions and having maybe some kind of tease for the like of, say, Kento up against Tanahashi, then by all means, that sounds great to me. If that's what we're getting from this, if that's what I take it that we're getting from this, similar to the Noah show that we had earlier in the year, third night of Wrestle Kingdom, then that would be great. I think that could be a fun show. I don't especially need there to be too many blowaway singles matches, but maybe if they could throw in one or two just to kind of give us that little bit of something else that was missing from the third night of Wrestle Kingdom, that would be fantastic. I'd be down for that show for sure.
Absolutely. It would feel like a great thing for All Japan to even be put on that same level as New Japan, in my opinion. And I think that there's opportunities for big matches. And, you know, you look at the roster for All Japan, it's not terribly big at the end of the day. So it's really going to be an all-hands-on-deck show for the All Japan side, I would say. So they're going to have to get some people from New Japan in to match up with them. And I think it's going to lead to an interesting show where they're going to use the guys they got and put them in big matches. We talked about this off the air a little bit, and you kind of mentioned it here. This match has a designated loss post.
Yes, definitely.
Like on both sides as well.
Yeah.
So you have a guy that can take a fall, and it really doesn't mean anything, you know, at the end of the day. You have the tag champ, yes, but then you have this third guy that can really be the target on if they're going to take the fall. And you can spruce things up, similar to the Noah show. If you look at the Noah and New Japan show, every Noah win was something where it was a really low-tier guy that ended up taking the fall. And Noah tried to do their best too. The main event ended up, Kaito ended up having to take the fall there. And you could definitely see something like that happening again with a similar big, maybe they have one big name match. But I'm like you. At the end of the day, we don't need a bunch of dream singles matches or anything like that. I think a card like this up and down is totally fine. And to see them knowing that they're going to have, they're willing to do these interpromotional matches for whatever politicking is going on behind closed doors, I think is a great news for everybody.
And this is also one of those shows where the third night of Wrestle Kingdom is very clearly a designated New Japan show. This one here is for the anniversary of Kurik and Hall. So it's more or less a neutral ground in a space that has meant a lot to both companies. So it doesn't necessarily have to be that New Japan get the kind of clear win, stand tall at the end of the night. They could do the time limit draw, and then you can kind of see both champions in the ring thanking the crowd and thanking them for the anniversary of Kurik and Hall. It doesn't need to be so clear cut. New Japan wins everything. So I'd look forward to this. I think this could be something unusual. I don't know where it's going to be airing, if this is going to be one that will be on, I assume, both platforms at some point. Hopefully it ends up on All Japan TV and New Japan World simultaneously.
I think that seems like the most likely possible outcome when it comes to the streaming services getting them. Maybe even if it's just late a little bit. much like Wrestle Universe got the airing of the show a week later, maybe they could do that for this as well. But otherwise, it's going to have to be like the old school days. Handheld versions of the show are going to have to pop up.
Yeah, we're going to get those bootlegs out there.
Yes, exactly. We're going to need somebody. That's something me and Striga have discussed. I don't think we ever said it on the show, but it's a question I'm going to lay out there to everybody. If you're a fan of 90s and 80s wrestling, how did they get these handhelds in the 80s and 90s? Who brought those cameras inside Cork and Hall and Sumo Hall and all of this for shows that didn't air and got them somehow to make tape online? How did that happen?
It's the old backpack with the camcorder trick from Seinfeld in it, where they have the backpack open just that little bit and kind of record through that, is my guess.
You are a man of great knowledge of...
When it comes to seemingly illegal stuff like this, like, that's just my guess as to how they did that. But there's definitely this proliferation of stuff from the 90s and stuff like that from the States. Is it the same with Puro? Do we have many bootleg Puro tapes?
I wonder if that's true or not. Are there any of those that really make the rounds these days? I don't know. It's one of those things that you just can't really say.
Yeah.
Anyway, one way or the other. But regardless, we can say we're looking forward to the show, and we do agree on that. There's too much agreeing. I need you to say something outrageous to make me better.
Sure. I just think that the most important thing at the end of the day, depending on how they want to book this, it doesn't matter who wins or who loses what match, as long as New Japan stands tall at the end of the night as the company that is clearly the king of sports. That's all I got. It's hard to say something contentious about the show, you know what I mean? Like, it just strikes me as a great show all around. It's hard to come up with anything.
Yeah, feel good type of show.
Yeah, exactly. I would really hate to be the one to stumble over that, you know what I mean? Like, that's all I got as far as controversial stuff. Can you top that? Is there something you could say, Eric Bischoff style, to get the headlines kind of springing out of this?
Well, I definitely can't say anything Eric Bischoff style, and I refuse to, if I even do it.
Yeah, good.
But I guess a crazy idea could be that Inoki needs to show up.
Yeah.
For the show. Because I mentioned this on the Patreon show the other day. They've teased him multiple times with New Japan this year.
Oh, man. Yes. Something to say about that for the anniversary show when we get to that.
Yes. Yes. Yes, a very direct reference to him on that particular show. And in fact, why don't we do that right now?
Sure, yeah.
Because it makes perfect sense. We talked about All Japan, and we're bridging to New Japan with the combined show. It's very logical how we're doing things right now. And New Japan had two shows, really. They kind of did back-to-back anniversary shows, almost. Like, one was the official anniversary show, and one was the unofficial anniversary show, where you had the junior title and the heavyweight title champions clashing, even though it was the official start to the New Japan Cup this year. So we'll talk about both of them. Have you watched both shows or just the anniversary show?
I haven't watched both shows yet.
Excellent. So, the anniversary show, first of all, I have to say one thing for sure, and that's that I really loved the opening segment to, and by segment I mean like this took like 45 minutes.
Yes.
The opening segment where they had all the legends come out, I mean, they got a lot of guys. And some of them I didn't even expect, really. Like, Kira Maeda was at this, and I really wasn't expecting him, but I was so happy to see him. Anybody who knows me knows I'm a huge fan of his, and I think the world of him as a wrestler. But they had all kinds of people. They had Kunyaki Kobayashi.
When they brought him out, I definitely thought Dylan will be pleased with that, to see him out there. And there was a beautiful photo of him, and he was backstage pictured with someone whose orbital bone that he actually broke back with that shoot kick.
That was one of his most famous moments, I would say, of his career, pretty much. But that said, they had everybody. They had, see him back is great. They had Kunyaki Kobayashi in there. They had Otani was there. Kensuke, Liger, Chono, Muto was there. It's like, man, they brought out everybody.
And Muto got one of those fantastic dad selfies in the middle of the ring with that group of legends that they had assembled, and that he shared that to his Twitter account. These fantastic, just like he did in the Tokyo Dome this year with the Noah roster, just kind of dad Muto holding the camera up and just getting the slight wrong angle. It was fantastic.
Oh, completely agree on that. That's an unexpected new gimmick that Muto is working out right now while he's on the mend. They had their old announcer too. There, like the ring announcer from like the Hashimoto days and stuff like that in there. They had everybody. Like it was pretty awesome. And they had the original Tiger Mask actually had a video message as well for that. So all of that, like, that was totally perfect, I thought, because it totally set the stage for another one of these, just what we said on the other show, a feel-good show. Maybe the matches aren't going to be 5 stars throughout or whatever, but it's going to be a lot of fun to watch. You're going to have good moments, good memories. And I came into this after that opening run. I was really into the show automatically with how they set it up.
Yep. To me, I think that this did everything it needed to from an anniversary show, except for that moment where you got as far as having, you know, the founder of the promotion there, and they've teased it a little bit. He had a very brief video message, I believe, before Wrestle Kingdom at the start of this year. But I felt like the absence of Antonio Inoki from the show was just kind of something, one of the glaring omissions, and one of the few at that. That was the one thing I felt like it missed. And Inoki hasn't been in good health for quite some time, and my understanding was that he was recovering, but probably not enough to be able to be there in person. And you got to be careful with COVID nowadays and everything like that as well. And there was a false news report late last year that Inoki had passed away, I think because of some of these circumstances and so on and so forth. But yeah, that was the one absence that I kind of felt, that I kind of thought that was something that they needed that they didn't have, but they could be building to that. They could have that later on in this year, and they've certainly got an entire 50th year to commemorate. So I guess they didn't put him out there with these kind of considerations in mind. But look, I very much enjoyed this show. I think it was a feel-good kind of show, as you mentioned. I think they hit all the right notes. The main event was never going to be a 5-star wrestling classic, but when you got Fujiwara in there, is he 70 now?
72.
72 years old and still in the middle of the ring. I want to be him when I grow up. You know, that was amazing, and I thought that he, you know, the exchanges that he had were never going to be classics or anything like that, but he still looked fantastic for 72. He was still in there. It was still the right dose of nostalgia for me.
He was still headbutting the turnbuckle.
Yes, and making that god-awful sound when he did.
Yes, a crazy moment, but one I think deep down I loved a lot, because that's classic Fujiwara there. And, you know, however old he gets, he's not going to lose all of himself. He's bringing himself to the ring as best he could. His interactions with Suzuki I thought were very fun. I really loved the interactions between Fujinami and Tanahashi as well. I thought they did a great job together. Obviously, Mid-Tour and Mid-Tea, I thought it was really fun at the end of the day in general, but I think the legends kind of stole the show for me in a lot of ways.
Yeah. I mean, they had this moment where they did a fairly standard exchange as far as, you know, lock up and a couple of different like headlock takeover and all this other stuff. And it looked slow and stuff like that, but they were hitting all of those moves. No one got injured. They went through all of them and they seemed game for more. And I don't know. I think that like the both of them gave a good accounting for themselves, and it was just fantastic to see them in a ring again. So I love this.
Yeah, I totally agree. Just some other news and notes from the show. You had the semi-main, which was the heavyweight tag versus the junior tag. You know, it was an interesting match. I liked that they did something a little different instead of doing the singles titles, having the tag titles on this show. I thought that was pretty cool. I think I also really enjoyed Goto using some of his junior moves when he was faced to Taguchi, especially because they were rivals when Goto's younger days, when he used to go to heaven, was really cool. It wasn't a great match or anything like that, but I thought it was pretty decent. A solid match between the two teams, one that you knew that the heavyweight team was probably going to win, but it ended up serving its purpose. I liked the concept of it. I thought it was pretty solid in execution.
Yeah, again, it's not going to be match of the year or anything like that, but they saved the heavyweight champion versus the junior champion match for the tournament. We couldn't have that on this night, so they went for the next thing down as far as the tag titles went. I thought that was a fine decision.
Totally.
Maybe that could be our segue to the next night then, as far as kicking off the New Japan Cup in the same arena, as far as that being the Budokan and everything else. What do you think of Escher?
Yeah, to be honest with you, I actually probably enjoyed the anniversary show more, just as a fun show, even though obviously the main event stood out of the New Japan Cup show. And yeah. In general, I think we've seen a lot of these guys. When you look at the Cup show, you saw some people on the undercards, like, you know, a Honma, try hard. You know, yeah. Obviously he's very broken down, but the effort was there, I think, up and down. I have to say, the one thing that kind of disappointed me most was the opening match. I thought Shima and Taka, they had some miscues in their match, which I really wasn't expecting, and I didn't think it really reached the level I thought it would. The match Strong Hearts had on the first night was it was good. I didn't think it was a tremendous performance or one better than a lot of stuff they did in their home promotion, but I thought it was a good introduction to them if you're purely a New Japan fan. And then you see Shima and Taka, and I think something just didn't click between them for some reason. And, you know, the finish was – it felt like to me like the match was kind of going into like a really downward turn, and Shima was just like, ah, screw it, I need to win this match now. And he just won. But I thought that match was kind of disappointing. It wasn't terrible, but I did think it was disappointing from my expectations.
Yeah, as far as opening matches go, I felt like it kind of hit all the notes it needed to and nothing more. I was fine with it. I didn't really go into it with any expectations because, without meaning to come across as crapping on the guy, Takumi Shinoku, I haven't really seen any great matches from him, maybe the past couple of years. I would welcome recommendations if anyone's seen any good stuff from him. Just, he's a veteran guy. He's a trainer. He's someone who is putting the majority of his body of work at this stage of his career into training other people. It reminds me of that year. I think it was 2017. He was announced for the Super J Cup the Best Super Juniors. And all these people were tweeting their responses that saying how excited they were to be in that tournament. And his reaction was, what the hell is this? So I wonder if maybe he doesn't want to be in the ring that much, and if he just doesn't have fantastic matches in him anymore. It I've never really had high expectations of his stuff, so it comes across as burying the guy perhaps, but I just did not expect that to be great on his end. I thought Shima would be doing the body of work in this match, and I think that turned out to be right.
Positive or negative, I just want honesty. And you told it like it is right there. You told it like it is.
It's not that he's a terrible worker. We've seen him do good stuff in the past. It's just at this point, I don't think he cares enough to be in the ring.
It's a great point, because when he was last in New Japan before this return, he was the manager of Zack Sabre Jr.
He was the hot guy, yeah, and he was fantastic at that role. But definitely it's something that I didn't see the energy that he put into that. Don't really see to his in-ring performance.
Yeah, I think his best match of this run was that tag league match where Tai Chi just beat him up. But they're friends now, suddenly.
Yeah. I just took that as the type of people that Suzuki-gun are, the kind of friends that anyone that has ever trained with their friends in mixed martial arts or in wrestling always has that one friend that says, we'll go 50% and then beats the shit out of you. I think that's probably what this was. Just those guys go hard against each other.
Shoot style Tai Chi is what you're saying.
Right, I didn't mean to go into shoot style Tai Chi, but sure.
That's where we've taken it.
Hashtag shoot style Tai Chi.
Absolutely. No one thought this is the direction we would go, but
Primarily because it's a bad idea, but let's go with it now because we're too far gone.
That's right. Great. The working relationship. Shima beat his old friend Taka. I think they need to have a UWF-style match in Great to settle this.
I think so. Tai Chi can work hard when he wants to, when he's motivated. I love his wrestling matches when they're tributes to the wrestlers that came before him, as far as his love letters that he writes to the Holy Demon Army. By all means, put him in a shoot style match and have him bring out that shit. I dare you.
You've made the call, and it's up to Great to pull the trigger on this. So let's
by all means, if they don't want to, feel free not to. That's we've given enough great ideas. No pun intended. For today, as far as our Champion Carnival lineup goes, that I think, yeah, we're entitled to a couple of terrible picks, and that's our terrible pick for the day.
Okay. I appreciate that. And I think that it's a future we can all look forward to. I liked the Gata Goto match pretty well. It wasn't like the banger it would have been 4 or 5 years ago, but I think that they had a very effective match, and they told a good story with Goto winning with the roll-up, the Goto Shiki. I always love how Goto, he's the one guy that brings out multiple finishers the most, I feel like. And they're all very good and different and believable and cool. And I think that it was very effective with the arm work of Nagata and how it played into the finish. I thought it was a good match.
I think that whole, those two nights in a row, one thing it did highlight to me with the kind of performances that we saw from the likes of Goto, Nagata, and at another point, I really kind of have to give Kojima some love as far as someone who bloody held the IWGP title and the Triple Crown at the same time. I hope that they can highlight him a bit more this year, being their anniversary of both companies, because just he had a great performance as far as the match that he was in on the anniversary show. And I know he hasn't got that far through as far as the cup goes and stuff, so on and so forth. But I really hope that we can see some stuff from him this year, because I think he's someone who deserves more respect than he gets from their booking. And he's a New Japan dad. I get that's a role for him in the company, but yeah, if there's someone that I would, you know, right now, actually, it seems like if you're 50 years old, you'd get at least a shot at the GHC title and a chance of winning. Maybe he could go to Noah as part of this new working arrangement that they seem to tentatively have, and he could be the one that wins the GHC heavyweight title and joins that triple crown club of people who have won all those belts.
I think it's a brilliant idea. I mean, who has said that we have too many old guy champions? I think we've all clamored for more, and not just you. But just, I think
if this is the direction that they're going in, if this is how far gone they are, then it might as well be a 50-year-old that we want to win one of these.
That would push out Muto's record, though, of holding all the titles, so that cannot be allowed. It has to be somebody who's not won the Triple Crown, unfortunately. But Kojima, great wrestler. Even now, as a dad, he is always entertaining, along with Nagata as well. I always love their matches that they have. They always bring it and try their best and have feel good matches, as we said. This is a feel good podcast right now. We're on right now. Overall. Tanahashi and Yo, I thought that was an interesting match. I have some takes on this. What did you think?
As far as Tanahashi and Yo goes, I thought that was a strong match. I thought, like, I wasn't expecting that Yo would look as good as he did. I thought that Tanahashi did a fantastic job with him, and that basically the result was never in question. And I think that was the thing that took me out of it the most, was we knew who was going over in that. There might have been one or two moments where they did well at dragging that out and making you think otherwise. But, yeah, overall, the thing that really took me out of it was just, at the end of the day, knowing who was going to win. And just that was not in dispute. But what was your take?
I completely agree with that. And I think that's a problem with the main event, too, is that it's so obvious who's going to win, that them going on, I do think that they timed it pretty well, maybe a little bit long, but – 16 minutes or so isn't that bad at all. And I think that they did a fantastic job just in terms of moves and execution, I thought this was probably one of Yo's best performances. Yeah. When you look at it, I thought he did a fantastic job, and I think Tanahashi deserves a ton of credit. He gave this guy a lot in this match for a junior who's kind of a nondescript one. It's not like he's been a champion or anything like that. He's been kind of a mid-tier junior, but he made him look as great as he could in this match. And the size advantage gave you a natural story, but he really did a lot of great things in this match. My biggest problem, I think this was a really good match that could have been a great, great match, like one of the best of the year, if Yo had just a little bit more fire and outward charisma. That I don't think he projected enough for this style of match. You know, when you have a match against Tanahashi and you're going on runs, I need to see you really, you know, go all out for it. And I don't think he really did that in terms of charisma. I think his moves and his wrestling was very good. I just wish he had a little bit more personality to him. And I think that's a real problem with him in general, with me, is that he's very bland. And I think that even though he wrestled very good in this match, one of his best performances, as I said, I think he didn't have enough fire to really make this go over the top to where it could have been.
Someone who I think needs that breakout performance and needs to show that he's capable of that. Especially this year. And yeah, he's really just been on kind of, you know, whereas I think Sho was fine before the heel turn and didn't need to do that and has kind of, I think, ended up in quite a bad place in terms of how he's presented in the ring. Doesn't really get to show off what he's capable of. I think Yo, on the other hand, has just gone a very bland kind of direction there, and I think he just kind of needs to, as you say, a chance to display something else. And if you're not going to go do that against Tanahashi, then against who, I guess, at the end of the day? Someone who wasn't like that, who's on the opposite end of the spectrum, was definitely El Desperado in that main event.
Oh, yeah.
From where I sit, in terms of what he showed and everything like that, that was a fantastic match. One of my personal picks for match of the year are definitely up there. Am I on my own in saying that? What did you think about the main event of the opening night of this New Japan Cup?
I thought Desperado was fantastic in this match. And just the idea of this match, again, what I said earlier, when we were talking about the All Japan segment, just the idea of this fresh guy to face Okada, I think was a great thing to make his title reign more interesting. It's something I said I wanted them to do when he won the title, not just play the hits, although the Naito match totally worked in terms of business and all of that stuff, and they had a match that a lot of people really loved, and it was a very emotional and cool match, but I would like to see some different styles of people wrestle him that he hasn't defended the title against before, again, or at least in a long time. And yep. Desperado was a great choice for that. In terms of the match, I thought they had a lot of really cool stuff. I love the idea of Desperado going for the numero dos right away in the match or very early on. And that instead of it being his finisher in this particular match, it was more like that was almost like the mental equalizer. Like, I've already got you my big move this far in, and now that kind of evens the odds for me, even though, because I know I'm at a disadvantage. If you look at the match, they start right away. Desperado basically mimes that, like, hey, this guy's way bigger than me. You know, like, they call attention to it right away. So him doing that was kind of like, hey, you might be bigger and more decorated than me, but I've got my move on you, and what can I do with that, and where can we go from here? I thought it was great psychology. I thought they had some big spots in the match. In particular, I loved when he countered Okada's dropkick into the dragon screw in midair. I thought it was a phenomenal moment. The only thing I will say negative about this match is what you said in the other match. There was no way Okada was going to lose to a junior under any circumstances.
I will admit to being a bit of a mark at one point of this, which is where toward the end of the match, they were kind of a stretch where I think Okada had already put El Desperado in the money clip, and then Despy actually managed to get out and reverse it and put on his own submission hold there. And Okada was kind of screaming and trying to get toward the rope, and then Despy essentially rolled him up and put him back in the middle of the ring. The way they sold that, that got me. That was the one moment, I think, in the entire match where I went, actually, could El Desperado win this? And I kind of wish they had gone that route, because then you set up that match again later. You have potential for El Desperado versus Okada in a rematch, and the New Japan Cup is traditionally where they have huge upsets. And we didn't get a huge upset on this show. So look, that was a missed opportunity, I thought, but they weren't going to ultimately do that to Okada. I don't think, I don't think that was going to happen.
I just think if it were another champion, that would have been more believable. I couldn't bring myself to see Okada tapping out to a junior under any circumstances.
Yeah.
But I'm more cynical than you. So let's keep that in mind. Right now.
I'm definitely on the opposite side of you when it comes to Okada. I think you and I have agreed with each other a lot in this episode. So, this is one thing we don't agree on is I tend to quite love Okada, but as I explained before we started recording in the pre-show, before we started hitting that button, I'm not objective when it comes to wrestling. My trips to Japan, I've encountered a lot of these guys. Either I've met them or I've seen the show, and I definitely had some fantastic main events I got to see live that Okada was in. And so I don't have the same objective filter, unfortunately, to him. I associate this guy with too many fond memories to be able to critique that and so on and so forth. But you're right to say it was never going to be that he would lose via tap out, but it was just a moment that they managed to get me, a moment they managed to make me go, oh, could they? And that's all I really ask for in a match like that.
That's the beauty of being a fan, is wanting to believe in this magical art form that is pro wrestling. So I really have no begrudging words on that or anything. I will say another thing. I thought Desperado was so great that it was a little bit jarring at the end for Okada to go into his traditional finishing run.
Yeah.
You know, just as an analyst type of deal, this stuff might not matter to everybody anyway, but it's like, I've always said, I'm not one of these guys that says you have to sell like you've been shot if somebody worked on your leg. I just want the match to matter. Like, that's all I ask for. And I think he kind of blew that off because it's like, okay, it's time for me to win now. Kind of like what I said about the Shima match earlier. Like, okay, it's time for me to do my thing now. People have come to see the Rainmaker, which, you know, that's a factual statement in a lot of ways. But I think that could have been handled a little bit better. That's just a small criticism. But I still really like this match a lot. One of the best of New Japan's year, for sure, I would say. I thought it was a really phenomenal performance by Desperado. He really showed himself as an incredible worker. And Okada, I know you said we are opposite on him, but I think he's 2-for-2 since he's won the title. I've liked both of his matches a lot with Naito and now this, and in different ways, even though I have some nits to pick with him, but still, I think he's mostly been a very successful champion thus far.
He had a fantastic interview, I think it was a Kurikan Hall show or something like that. I think with New Japan, you're pretty safe saying a Kurikan Hall show, but after it, he basically... it ended up on Wald, but he said, look, back when, we had the tournaments a few years ago, I was not the best junior. I had not been anywhere near the best junior. My performances weren't there. And now I'm trying to be that. And I think he's trying to be the ace of that division. And I think that he's stepped up in a big way. I would welcome him in the G1 this year. I think he'd be someone who could freshen things up. If New Japan aren't looking outward and if they're not looking to work with like other companies, he could be someone that could fit nicely into something like that. And he's shown he can work against heavyweights. So that's my other, if we're booking tournaments as we want them this episode, and I think we are, then that would be what I would love out of this year if they could do it.
Absolutely. That's what this is all about, ultimately. Fantasy booking for ourselves and
while we can, before they come in with their damn booking and doing everything.
Yes, there's only one right way, and it's our way in wrestling. But I do think it's worth mentioning, unfortunately. First of all, I completely agree with you. And it's something I think that they need to do, because ultimately, again, on a negative sense, this show did over 1,000 less people than the show just one night before with a 70-year-old man facing Okada, like on opposite ends in the main event. And I think it's a testament. It's not anything wrong with Desperado that is causing this. And we saw it last year with Ibushi that things didn't go very well. Again, is it Desperado's fault? No. It's because they have not built him and this whole division really up as much as they should have. So I think that they need to start somewhere. And if it's by giving him a spot in the G1 and having him get some upset wins, even if he's not scoring a ton of points making the finals, I think having him go in there and show that the juniors are just as good as the heavyweights, or at least on the same level, even if there is a little bit of a divide, I think that would be so important for the division. And then you can branch. This is kind of what I said my plan for Hiromu was. And they've kind of transferred to Desperado. Listen, Hiromu is a great star on his own, but you need to use that stardom to transfer to other people. And I think that they've done good, you know, they've done a decent attempt with him and Desperado, but I didn't think their Wrestle Kingdom match was anything to write home about personally. And then Desperado kind of came into this match pretty cold. It wasn't a well-built match, in my opinion, other than just, hey, we're doing this junior and heavyweight match because it's the anniversary time and it's New Japan Cup. I would have liked to see Desperado get something to really build him up and make the fans want to see him in the main event, which they didn't do at all in the last month, really.
Even if all they had was at the end of that fantastic first night show, you know, the anniversary show, while Okada's in the ring and kind of there with these legends, if El Desperado just sort of sauntered out to the ring and just shot him a slightly filthy kind of look, and then sauntered away. Even something that says, I'm here now and you need to notice me. That's what they were clearly wanting to achieve through this match. And even just give us a little bit of something like that would have enhanced that.
That's an excellent idea. And that's something you don't even really have to work hard at all. Like, you know, something like that would go a long way just to have him say, like, look, he's on the same level as these legends that are in the ring, including Okada, who's definitely a legend in New Japan. I was watching a match, the first match, like I said, I haven't been watching a lot of wrestling the last week or so before the show. But before I watched this show, I watched an old-style match in the Joshi scene, Manami Toyota versus Suzuka Manami from 1991. And at the end of it, they put over Suzuka at the end, and they had a segment where basically, Suzuka offered Toyota a handshake after she had just won the white belt from her and then faked her out from it. And then Toyota kind of did her thing and then faked her out right back. Something like that, that you could have had even like a playfully rival interaction between Desperado and Okada would have been perfect, I think, to just give him a little bit of rub, which they refused to do or just didn't do in this case. And that's something I would like to see in the future. Like, give these guys spots. That's a great – see, I love your idea. But, you know, besides just a G1 or wins or losses or any of that, just show that you care about them on the same level as the heavyweights. And I think it would go a long way.
And, I mean, they did one thing in this match through the logic of Okada's matches, which was he put the money clip on him and then kind of went, actually, no, fuck this. I have to hit him with the Rainmaker if I'm to win. And – he actually had to use his finisher on the guy. And the announcers put that over huge as being him doing that. But I just, yeah, I feel like we just needed that little bit more. And, in the end, I think El Desperado will be fine if they can continue to build equity into him. And hopefully they do that this year. I don't suppose that Gato particularly, listens to this show, but then again, I could be wrong, you know, and if any bookers do listen to this show, I think that we've given them a gold mine of ideas for this week.
I think your secret reason for coming on the show, you want a job, okay? You're trying to get hired.
I started off by writing a book that I hoped they would notice, and now I'm kind of using podcasts to put ideas out there. I'm just kind of breadcrumbing the idea the entire way.
Okay, I like what I'm hearing right now. This is the kind of worker mentality that I respect.
You don't have. I said before we started recording, you don't need to be a pro wrestler to be a carnie. I think is the way that this works. I tell you what, like I've worked a little bit in journalism, a little bit in academia, and definitely pro wrestling is not the only place where you see workers and politicians and people who are carnies in real life. So there you have it.
Absolutely. I feel like you're well on your way to becoming the Australian Double J.
I think that, you know, that there are worse trajectories as far as people from Australia and ways of going about things as far as that. I mean, if anyone wanted to buy some gold.
Is that even possible? Is Global Force Gold still available, or is that something he's planning to bring back?
I mean, ultimately – we haven't seen him show up. He's currently got a fantastic podcast where he comes across as quite a charming individual.
I really enjoy his show. It's worth
checking out. In that whole thing, you know, that's the first step. You get people on side, and this is his way of doing that, I think, over time. I think we're not going to see him relaunch Global Force Wrestling yet. He has to build to that, you know, let that happen.
That's a slow burn, and it makes perfect sense. Like I said, and I think we both know that Double J, a fellow Tennessean as well, much like myself, I think he's more from the Middle Tennessee area, and I'm more from the West Side, but he's wrestled in Memphis many years. So I think we know he's listening. He's always a big supporter. Shout out to Double J out there. But my booking idea for you that's going to be genius, if you're listening to this, Double J, next time you go to GCW or any of those kind of indie shots you've been doing lately, bring a bag with some Global Force gold and sell it at the merch table. You will sell out, I guarantee it.
So earlier we had next time people hear us, again, breadcrumbs, they're going to hear us talk about our three favorite wrestling games and one terrible one. Earlier in this episode, we talked about sort of who we'd want, in the Champion Carnival. One thing we could have done, and I'd love to do right now, is who would be a terrible pick that you could throw in, like someone who'd just be the shit. my pick, and he was always an okay worker, but if we're going to talk about someone being carny and working their way in there, I've got to choose Double J as my pick in terms of someone. Yeah, just Double J in the Champion Carnival.
He's probably a fan of Japanese wrestling. If you listen to the show, he always talks about stuff like that. Like he loves all wrestling.
Into Wrestle Kingdom back in the day. It was his company that gave us the English commentary for Wrestle Kingdom in 2015, and he managed to get himself a spot in the Bullet Club and on the show. Maybe he can get himself a spot in All Japan in the Champion Carnival. So that's my pick. Do you have another one to offer?
Nothing can beat that. I feel like
I'm sorry. I took the gold for myself. Then.
Yes, exactly. Like, hey, listen, that's what it's all about. Listen, you're trying to get a job. I'm trying to help other people in wrestling right now. I try to give Double J some ideas, and now I'm putting you over with the Double J to All Japan idea. But I know he said he had the tapes of like Super J Cup or something.
Oh wow!
Back in the day,
he's a fellow like internet mock for Japanese pro wrestling.
Yeah, at his core. Yeah, he watches everything. Indies, Mexico. Like he's all over the place, man. Double J, Tennessee, the best wrestling state, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And he's one of the leaders of the charge for sure. But maybe, listen, we've seen this shows how behind I am. Again, we were talking out there. I'm sure there's probably a lot of controversies and stuff I missed over the last couple of weeks. But the last thing I remember is Buff Bagwell wanted to do a death match.
Yep.
He can't do that. He can't go to Champion Carnival if they want to bring Buff in.
Oh, fuck. I remember years ago he said he wanted to be in WWE so bad that he'd do it for free. And I'm just like, you could just book him, All Japan, book this man for free. He'll get himself to Japan and just give him a merch table and a chance for Buff to sell his stuff.
He is the stuff and a former G1 competitor in 1997.
Yes,
who could forget that brilliant run that he had? Listen, that's another thing. Shout out to Ken right now. I know he's recovering. I know he'll love that I said this. For a long time, we would watch a lot of wrestling over the years, you know, probably starting all the way in the 90s, late 90s, early 2000s, whatever. Whenever anybody would do anything, and it could be anything, like, anytime there was a mystery person, it doesn't matter who or what the situation was. Immediately, I would tell him, I would say, it's obvious who this is. Buff Bagwell.
So, they could have a mystery opponent on one of the nights of the Champion Carnival, and it turned out to be Buff.
Yes, exactly. And I will finally have my heyday over Ken, because 100% of the time I would say this, he would say, Buff can never wrestle again. He injured his neck too much. Even after he came back and returned, in Ken's mind, that was the day his career ended. He never came back after his neck injury, which was a very terrible injury. But he did come back and still wrestles today on top of
it. Back in the 90s, there was that old kind of conspiracy theory that the Ultimate Warrior had died, and the person that came back was someone else. Maybe Buff Bagwell never actually returned to the ring, and this has just been a new guy since 97 or whatever year it was.
Yeah, that must have been around there, 97, 98. But you think a fake Buff Bagwell, what a conspiracy we've uncovered on the show. Talk about a direction nobody thought this would go. me definitely at the top of that list. But I love it. I love any Buff Bagwell mentioned. I think, hey, shout out to Striga. He's seen Buff Bagwell live when he was at WXW.
Oh, this just gets better and better, doesn't it? I saw Jeff Jarrett live. He did a show in Australia in the Olympic Park back in 2000. And I want to say that was in 2005, actually. He was the NWA champion, and he started off by saying, "You guys need to get a better sport than rugby. You need a real sport." And then he said,
"Hey, we're not talking down rugby right now, Double J. What are you doing?"
And he said, "Are you sure I'm at the wrestling show? This looks like a wanker convention." And I'm just like, this is the worst heel heat I've ever seen. But you bet I'm joining in everyone right now and chanting Jarrett's a wanker as far as things that we chanted at him that night. And yeah, it was just one of the worst insults I've ever heard in the context of pro wrestling. And yet it kind of worked so well. So yeah, book this man, Champion Carnival, opposite mystery opponent Buff Bagwell on the opening night.
Aha! He said afterward as well, no doubt. But yes, so these were both definitely terrible ideas. So
bottom of the bag.
We'll see if we can beat them on the video game role, which may be difficult. But what were we even talking about?
Oh, sorry, we just got to, we're at the end of, talking about just the opening night of the, New Japan Cup and the anniversary show. But we're talking terrible booking ideas, and is that a good segue to talking about Pro Wrestling Noah and that championship, or not really?
It's a brilliant segue, but I'm going to have to pass on it because.
Okay, fair.
But it's not a terrible segue to what I'm going to, because we still have some bad booking ideas in the bag, ladies and gentlemen.
Of course, good.
Because I want to ask you, we've seen the first night of the Cup.
Yeah.
We really loved the main event, and it was awesome and all that. My bad booking idea on my prediction show on the Patreon, I had Yujiro upsetting Naito on there. Unfortunately, maybe fortunately to some people, but unfortunately for me, Yujiro did not win. I was really rooting for him to set up a no limit true rivalry, but it did not come to pass. We see Naito advance. But where I'm going with all this is, what do you think this tournament is? How do you think this is all going to play out? We see the competitors in here, it's all single elimination. It's this weird format with buys to these super random people, you know, that really don't make a lot of sense in a lot of ways. Like a young lion has a buy somehow with this. It very weird. Where do you think this is all going? Who's winning the tournament? Maybe a final four when you look at the bracket?
It's hard to kind of – you broke that down so brilliantly on the show where you fill out your bracket. It's hard to kind of predict – with just how chaotic this entire thing is. I think it would make sense to have a winner similar to Jeff Cobb, someone who can win the whole thing, can get put over, can benefit from a win, but can then go and do the honors to Okada without any damage. Zack Sabre Jr. was very similar to that back in 2018, and that's what I would like to see, at least. I'd love to see Cobb kind of win, or someone like him kind of win the entire thing, and to do that, you know, to ultimately be the one who doesn't win the title but wins this and gets some shine off of it. That's where I'd like to see it. It's hard to kind of boil this down from all the craziness, though, that's involved in the tournament. It succeeded my expectations so far, I have to say. I think they brought it on the first night, but, you know, I wasn't expecting much from it, if I'm honest with you. They exceeded my expectations for that first night, and I would love to see Jeff Cobb win the thing, but what do you think? Who would you pick, or who do you think they're going to going with? You filled out the entire kind of on the $5 big hash tier, you filled out the entire bracket. Do you want to remind people of who you went with that, or do you want to make them pay to get that?
No, I'll tell everybody what they want to do. They should sign up anyway, because we have lots of good stuff on there, even besides that. But 90s Project, all the live, you know, same day, day after reviews, and all that cool stuff. But for this tournament in specifics, I could tell you listened to what I had to say on the show, because I completely agree with everything you just said about Cobb. It makes perfect sense when you look at the brackets. He has a pretty decent, you know, run where he has guys like Kojima and Yoshihashi coming up that he can beat and basically be locked into the Final Four, more or less. You know, to me, the big roadblock is how are they going to handle Okada in this tournament? Because usually the heavyweight champion hasn't always been in this tournament until just recently, and we haven't really seen a good lineage of how that's going to play out. With Okada's big title reign right now, him really being set the stage so far, so good. Like I said, I've really liked both of his matches as champion. How are they going to get around him being in there? Because in my bracket I filled out, my idea was for Cobb to beat Okada in there. And to beat Taichi. I want Taichi to beat Okada, and then he just go to the finals. But
Yeah, if you think back to, you know, the first IWGP tournament they ever had, which was Hulk Hogan winning in this circumstance where he knocked Antonio Inoki out. He gave him the axe bomber on the apron, and Inoki just kind of went out to the ring and sold, to the extent that people thought he was actually knocked out. And that was just him working and stuff. But, like, you could always, if it's the 50th anniversary and he's paying homage as is to Inoki wearing the Inoki robe, I'm just fantasy booking here, but do that finish again. Have Cobb or have someone knock Okada out on the apron, have him get knocked out of the ring, and the ref either say he's unconscious or count him out and do a homage to the original IWGP tournament. He doesn't have to lose that way. He doesn't have to get pinned, but you have him lose in another way where you kind of point to what happened back in the day.
I would really enjoy that. That's a great call on your part, a great reference. I did want to say, because it's something we didn't mention, and we should have, and I forgot to mention it at the time, but at the end of the anniversary show, they did do his chant. Fujinami did end up leading the chant at the end. So I tried to bring back the old school vision of Inokiism with the 1-2-3-da chant at the end, which was a lot of fun, obviously. So I completely love your idea of Okada modeling himself after Inoki more and more, because it's such a weird fit on paper.
Yeah.
Just stylistically. But I love it. I think it's a really cool. I thought that was a great moment when he wore the robe at Wrestle Kingdom, and it makes him, you know, just seem very cool and important and very much a champion. So I'm all for this. And like you said, your idea laid out would fit perfectly in protecting him while allowing Cobb to advance. And I also like the idea of the winner of the tournament beating Okada on the way. So you don't have, you know, say somebody else beats Okada and then Cobb wins anyway. And then it's kind of like you muddy the waters with two challengers and stuff like that you don't really need to get into, in my opinion. So I completely agree with you. I think Cobb will be there. In the other side of the bracket, we had Ibushi get injured once again. And that's just a very unfortunate situation. I mean, he's had a lot of bad luck. I really feel for Kota Ibushi. Hopefully he gets well soon.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Something you don't like to see ever, and at least we can, I guess, say that hopefully this means they're not rushing his return.
Absolutely. I think it's much better for them to make the right call and keep him out if he's still hurting. No need to bring him in for this. And it was unlikely he was going to win anyway. I do think he would have beaten Okan if he were healthy, but Okan winning makes sense too. I mentioned this on the other thing where they've kind of been building Okan up. On the last month, he was doing a lot of singles matches, and a lot of them were really good, too. I really liked his matches versus Honma and Kojima. I thought they did much above my expectations on there, and I think that they did purposely build him up a little bit, and he can pretty much take Ibushi's role and be a Final Four participant. Either, you know, they could tease him and Cobb in the final, or you could have Shingo go to the final, who I think will be on the other end as well. So it's like you have like a lot of different things they could do. Shima coming in. I think in general, I mentioned this on the show when this bracket got announced, they shot themselves in the foot by announcing it would be a 48-man field early, because I think everyone went a little crazy. Like, you know, and not crazy, but their mind went right to fantasy booking, because you think, oh, man, they're going to have outsiders with this now.
Yeah.
But people don't realize how big this roster is, and that's why you have all these guys. And you end up, I think my prediction when they said they were going to have a New Japan Cup and they didn't announce the brackets, I said there might be one guy, one or two guys, and they ended up doing exactly that with Shima. And I will say, if you look at Shima's part of the bracket, I think he's set up to have a little bit of a run here. Already getting a win, I think he'll advance over Kanemaru, and I don't see any reason why he can't beat Goto. And him versus Okada, I think, would be an interesting match, and very logical for this master politician to take a loss to would be someone like Okada, and it would set up a potential tag match, a tag title match, in the future for them. So I really think Shima's going to have a good run here.
Yep, definitely. And look, I mean, it's great seeing him in New Japan and to see this, and to see them embrace great in the way that they have. I just hope that this is not like this kind of thing where that's the only partnership that we're going to see. I mean, the way that great has managed to kind of use their relationship to All Japan, their relationship to New Japan, in some cases on the same show, as we saw in their last show last year, the final show of the year that they had, that I think that they benefit from working with many, many different partner organizations. And I just hope that New Japan aren't the only ones that get all the love, you know what I mean?
I totally agree with that, because all of the companies add something different to what they're doing. So I really couldn't have said it better myself, and I hope for the same thing as you. But I do agree with you. I think they've done a very good job with this relationship so far, still on a smaller scale, but I think everything they've done has hit the right notes, from show going over to great to now the Shima stuff. They had the Strong Hearts on the anniversary show. Tanaka as well. He looked really good in his match too, on the anniversary show. I thought he looked really phenomenal. So good stuff there. In general, I think we both see Cobb as the winner. I think that that would probably be the majority, I think, pick. But you can't write out someone like, Shingo getting a rematch. I just think that they wouldn't do that, considering Okada beat him for the title.
It's just a little too soon for that. I mean, I think when you've got a big rematch like that, it kind of doesn't need a New Japan Cup win behind it. I think that could just be Cobb could mosey out, Shingo could mosey out at the end of a show at some point after getting a big win and just challenge Okada right up. And I think that's kind of enough impetus by itself. I don't think you need to give him the New Japan Cup to achieve the same point. But, I do hope it's Cobb at the end of the day. But we'll see how that shakes out.
Absolutely. So with that said, we got one more topic to talk about. Yeah. I know you've been waiting for this. And it's one of those things, we tease things effectively on the show, and now the payoff is coming. We have to talk about Pro Wrestling Noah. We recorded, me and Striga did, our show literally a day before their show happened. So we can't let it slide, even though it was a couple of weeks ago. We have to talk about it, because it was a big news story, and I stupidly said that I didn't think that Nakajima was going to lose the title. My logic was this. They had done an angle before this match where Fujita had stolen the GHC title, and I thought that was a signal that he was going to get the title back. I did not think it was going to be a straight pinfall victory. I thought it would be something goofy, maybe some kind of count out on the outside or a draw or something like that. But somehow he would get the title back. But I dared doubt Nosawa's love of questionable champions beating up their main young talent and making them, taking them down a peg, so to speak. So we saw it. Kazuyuki Fujita beat Katsuhiko Nakajima, picked him up, beat him again. He was ruthless. it was a complete dismantling of Nakajima at the end of the match. They did go back and forth in their match. Nakajima hit him very hard when the time presented itself. But this has been talked about a lot. I don't think we need to go super crazy over this because it's a little bit old hat at this point, but we got to talk about it somehow. And I need to know your feelings. I reviewed this show on the Patreon after it happened. But I need to know your feelings, Jonathan.
Sure.
Tell me what you think about that.
So I loved it when it happened, because here I am sitting on my couch watching the match, and I'm like, he has just hit that kick. Nakajima's down. I'm like, here we go. This is what's going to happen, because he just lifted his head up, right? I'm thinking now Nakajima's going to get a flash pin, or maybe even one of those events where we see someone kick out just after the three kind of thing. And then he hits this power bomb and he pins him and he wins the belt. I didn't see that coming. You don't always get that in pro wrestling, where you can legitimately say, I'm in the moment right now. I'm not thinking about the future. I'm not thinking about what does this booking here mean and how does this reflect the long-term prospects and future of pro wrestling. Now, I'm thinking in that moment, holy shit, this guy won. And then it dawned on me maybe 5 seconds after the fact, after I'm marking out and jumping out of my chair because this guy won and enjoying it, I then went, but Nakajima's just had this happen after they've put all this equity in him, and this is the wrong call to make, and this is not good for the future of the company. And so I enjoyed it for 5 seconds and then kind of went down to earth and went, oh God, this is, where are they going to go with this? And if the case is true, and we don't know for certain, but if it isn't true that, that this guy refused to do a job, that Fujita did not want to lose to Nakajima, and so that was why he won, then that doesn't go well, for Noah's future and for their long-term booking. So I guess I felt kind of more mixed than a lot of people. A lot of people were either kind of clamoring for this in the case of some of the Enochiists, or saying that Noah is dead. I'm a lot more ambivalent about this one than a lot of people. I think that you need to have a plan in terms of your long-term booking, and you shouldn't uproot that for someone just because they are not willing to do a job or are unable to for whatever reason. So look, in this case, I loved it as a moment, just seeing him win, because I didn't see it coming. But I was taken out of that not very much long after that. And I do hope that they have something that they can do out of this that can alleviate the situation. It is awful that Nakajima's got a ruptured eardrum. I had that when I was very young, and it's still, I still feel the after effects of ruptured eardrum to this day, especially on flights and stuff like that. So, I hope that he can recover from this in one way or another. I think they could rehab him over time. But in this event, I don't know where this is going at all. It could just be Segura winning all the belts, in which case, hey, sure, that could rehab everything.
Yes, that was someone's plan to get out of this, that I know, that Segura would just win all the belts. As I said, they need an MVP at Tokyo Sports, and I think setting him up for this is a brilliant book.
Before he wins the Champion Carnival and all the rest of the belts, yeah.
Exactly. And hopefully they get around to him in the G1 as well. He needs to target Okada and, by proxy, Inoki himself. It's like beating Okada is now like beating Inoki in a lot of ways. So he gets
beating his own mentor, basically.
Exactly. And now he will get the third generation title as well, in addition to the current IWGP championship. Yep. But overall, though, I have to say, I think the match was pretty good, actually.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the thing about Fujita, and I'll always say this. Say what you want about him. I hate when he gets compared to Muto, because I think it's kind of a lazy comparison in a lot of ways, at least when it comes to the in-ring. Yes, they're old and bald, but they wrestle way different. If you look at Fujita, he's much, much more believable and better, in my opinion, than Muto is. I actually think here's the main problem. As far as, like, who's doing the job and all that, I'm just going to be honest with you. I don't care about any of that at all. Listen, if that's true, that to me is completely Nosawa's fault for letting the inmates run the asylum. which you should never do as any kind of booker or promoter or anything like that. You know, if I was a promoter and somebody tried to pull this on me, I don't care if it's Muto, Fujita, or anybody, I would tell him no. And if he was very aggressive about it, I would fire him and then write a book. I'd be like Sayama. I'd be writing a book called Kayfabe, where I talk about how he doesn't want to do jobs and he's unprofessional.
Yeah. Or, ultimately, I just thought of one other way out of this, which is you bring in the only person who has refused more jobs than Fujita, the person whose return to Japanese pro wrestling I think everyone's been clamoring for. The person who has not been seen since 1997, you have Buff Bagwell beat Fujita and take the GHC title. And then, anyway, sorry, I think we've overused that joke a bit.
It was good the first time. You had a huge win with the Double J plan. I think we're kind of driving it off the cliff. But, like, here's the thing, though. Ultimately, about this whole deal, I think this would not have gotten nearly the amount of backlash if this had happened later in the year.
Yeah.
And I think that's where the big problem is. I don't think Fujita is the issue necessarily. I think the timing for Nakajima, that's where this is so terrible, because you totally undercut this guy.
Mm.
As you said, they put so much into him last year. He had basically a full year build-up with the hair match and the tag titles and then the turn and the storylines, winning the tournament, winning the title, main eventing Budokan Hall in their big show. It's like you basically undercut all of that when there was so much gas left in the tank. And I really wonder why this couldn't have waited. I know when all this came out, there was a part where some kind of report where it was like they weren't happy with the January 1st attendance or whatever, which, you know, it seemed to me, again, it's not like I'm talking to the president directly with this, so take it with a grain of salt. But just from what I could tell, it felt like not really a win, but not a dramatic loss either. It was like, you know, mid-tier, kind of mediocre-ish what they could have done and expected at the end of the day. But at the end of the day, I just think that the timing of it all is what really hurt it.
Mm.
And I wish that they could have waited until after the Cyber Fight Fest show. If he had held the title then and lost, that would have been perfect, in my opinion.
It would have mirrored Muto's in that way. You would have seen the kind of way that what they did last time. In that you had a title run that lasted from one point until that Cyber Fight Fest. It gets us to think about Cyber Fight Fest as an important kind of event.
Absolutely. So just to kind of wrap this whole thing up right now, because like I said, I think that the title reign can be interesting. There's no telling where it's going to go. I don't think anybody can really predict that. But who do you think is going to take the title off of Fujita ultimately?
Oh, that's so hard to tell, See, it's tempting to think that Segura might, because of the fact that Segura is the guy that he dropped the national title to, and it's tempting to think that will repeat itself. Yeah, exactly. It's tempting to think that. It could simply be that Fujita, now that he's got a contract, now that he's got this other job with Noah in training people, that they might be able to bring him in-house enough where he stands to lose more if he refuses the job, if that makes any sense at all, and that maybe he'll do business for someone else, and that we might actually see him put over someone that would make sense in Kaito Kiyomiya or someone.
We can only hope that happens at the end of the day. Maybe we don't have a lot of faith in that, but I will say that I said this on Twitter, and one thing that I think not enough people are looking at, pay attention to the sponsors. If Abima wants something, then them following it makes me understand it a lot better. And that's what I always said with Muto. I know a lot of people didn't like it, and I didn't like it as a fan. I'm not going to lie to you. But if they wanted it, it's a good business decision, and I could justify it in my head. So, that's where I'm at the end of the day. Hopefully we can move on and do some good things. But, Jonathan, it was so great to have you on the show. I really appreciated all the time we got to have. I really love doing the show with you. Final thoughts you want to say, plug, whatever you got to plug, your social media and all that stuff, and yeah.
Well, it's been awesome being on here, and thanks so much for having me and for thinking of me. Like I say, I feel like I've kind of jumped right in there, and I feel like Fujita getting away with the title at this point to be allowed on this show and to be able to share this time with you. In terms of the stuff I have to plug, please do check out Ganbaru if you haven't already. I've been super just satisfied and super grateful for the love of the book has gotten and the people who have checked that out. I've been here, there, and everywhere as far as different appearances and the opportunities that this book has had for me, that it's opened for me. So if you haven't checked it out, it's available through Amazon. And beyond that, if you want to find me on Twitter, the handle you might find in the tweet that we feature for this, but at Jonathan Foy, very boring Twitter handle, I know. But you can find there the writing I do, as well as the links to the book itself and anything else. Man, it's just been a fucking dream to be on here, and I really appreciate you and everything that you're doing in this space and for having me on here.
Thank you so much, man. I really love the book myself, and hopefully you have even more success, more love and more followers and all that cool stuff going on. So thank you so much. You were phenomenal on the show, and hopefully everybody out there enjoyed it. Hopefully, and while we know it won't be the last, next week we're going to do another show on the Patreon. Yeah, so everybody sign up for that. Check out our Twitter at Eastern Lariat. We're going to do March Madness. It's going to be a lot of fun. And follow me on Twitter at Viva_Zero. At Striga, he'll be back soon, and we'll have a lot of fun on the next episode. And you might be able to listen to that, Jonathan, too, when he comes on, too.
You can bet that I will. And as far as me looking for jobs go, I'm definitely not going to try to undercut Striga or take his job. So if you ever need anyone, I'm always here.
I appreciate that.
I seriously am not going to try to take Striga's job. It was fantastic to be even considered for this. It was fucking phenomenal. So thank you. Thank you.
Absolutely. I'm sure. Hopefully he enjoys it. Wherever he's at, hopefully you enjoy this. We did it for you, Striga. We did it for you.
I will be able to hear about WXW on the next show as well, and how that whole adventure went.
Absolutely. I can't wait for that personally either. So, yeah, that's going to be a lot of fun. As I said, thank you. Big shout out to all the listeners out there. We really appreciate all the love and support we're getting. Thank you guys so much for anything nice you got to say about us. Shout out to Ken. Get well soon. You'll be back on the next episode. But with that said, as always, you know I love you. And until next time, sayonara.